Side B, Bob?
Yeah. Moving along with the Bob Show.
Yeah, all right. The Bob Show is now in process. In progress. There. Yep, we're...
Do you like it?
Dang, I almost forgot. Who else has new information? Brand new information. Bob and only Bob.
Can't do it.
This had to be recorded through a fly's ear. You have to have a fly to see it. Okay.
Bob.
Who else? Bob. Thank you. Dang, I almost forgot. Who else has new information? Brand new information. Bob and only Bob.
Who my kids on?
Master, this had to be recorded through a fly's ear. You have to have a fly out to see it. Yes. Bob, we talked last night about Maitreya, and I was saying that he was going to make his day of declaration when the stock market in Tokyo goes. This morning I picked up the July issue of Dimensions magazine. There's a little smear piece in there about Maitreya. Apparently, the weekend of April 22nd, he declared himself to invited guests. Maitreya, it says, appeared and disappeared, showing his control over matter, time, and space. The invited guests who had previously agreed not to speak of their contact with Maitreya were now encouraged to come forward publicly and tell of their experiences. And then the piece goes on to question why it's been 3 months and nothing's come of it. There seems to be some sort of media cover-up. I don't know what that's about. But he's already starting to seem irrelevant, so that's okay. But this next show, I want to give you my recipe. Actually, it's Yoko Ono's Void of Course Fruitless Marmalade recipe, so be ready for that. Peace.
Hi, Bob. Sorry you haven't called me, but you've been pretty busy. Anyways, talk to you later.
It's your wake down call. All I can say is thanks once again, Bob. I'm digging deeper.
Keep up the Bob work, Bob. Later.
So, all roads lead to Bob, and Rome didn't burn in a day. I'm quoting from Stanley Burroughs' Healing for the Age of Enlightenment, Vitaflex section. The pituitary gland controls are also important relief points for headaches. These points are found in the center of the first joint pads of both thumbs and the big toes, that's TO. These points stimulate or depress the pituitary to normal function. This is the master gland. When this is functioning to full activity, the rest of the body becomes in tune with it. The big TO. Thanks.
I hope you're well, but that's a stupid thing to ask, Bob. Haha, right, Connie? So, and when I get my record pressed, I'm going to be trading Connie's album for one of mine. What a deal for me. All right. So, but that's funny to Bob how you like that song, Baby It's You, and we're going to put it on the record. There you go. Three very distinct versions, too. Very funky, very danceable, very well sung, very well produced, very well played. All different styles. We do it all. No problem. All right. So, see you tomorrow.
Okay, I'm starting to get a grip on this, Bob. You're going to keep talking until we reach collective consciousness. Or when you stop talking, we'll have reached collective consciousness.
Bob, it's Jerry. It's Monday, July 9th, 11:50. And my straitjacket is soon to be tightened.
I mean, I don't know much about the science and what there is to go around and whether we could afford to have a lot more people here on Earth than there are. But it's possible that there are just not enough of them, and that is the source of our problem.
In Toronto, and I'm so happy. I guess I have trouble separating the church from my state.
We're on. You're too close to your mic, Bob. Gotta get closer. I'm not sure here. There's no. That's for mine. Bob, you gotta talk into the microphone. It's stuffy.
It's not coming through all that well. Could be.
What? Okay.
We're working?
Yeah, that's okay. Okay.
It was that easy.
Real Canadian Week. Are you on, Kent? No, you're not on. Maybe the other one's screwing it up there. No, you got to be on, Kent. Hey, put the one over to the left.
It says only to use three or four, and that's what we're doing, right? We can't.
Kent. Oh, there we go.
Okay.
I was using the other one, too. I was still in that.
Oh, there's the rub.
Okay, we're ready?
So,
what we said hasn't gone over yet.
No, we've just been mumbling to ourselves and letting dead air go.
Okay, this is Real Canadian Week.
This is real radio.
The revolution was supposed to start. One of the revolutions was supposed to start tonight. We had everybody lined up to come in. And I guess these people are going to be canceled come the new bureaucracy, which will be very temporary. So they don't have to worry about that. They'll get in the next shift. The absentees tonight for the revolution, of course, Mike Dyer failed to show up for the revolution. The true colors for Real Canadian Week. Wayne Morris failed to show up unless he's on his way.
And he could be.
He could be on his way?
Yeah, he could be.
All right. And Jim Patterson, he would never come, but still he should be here, right, in some form.
Yeah.
Anybody else promised?
Jerry.
Okay, now, Jerry. Who did show up? Yeah, we get to the point of who showed up. We got the alternate Bob, the understudy Bob Duggs here. We have a fantastic Studio Newfield man.
Studio Newfield.
New feeling, expresses a new atmosphere. He offered the new theme song, which is going to go commercial, be a club hit. And so it's not really ours, but baby, it's you. You, Kent, me, all of us tonight. And we have a special guest here, a Canadian, by nature, by instinct. He grew up in Flint, Michigan, which is, who's forgotten Furry Lint?
Yep.
Larry Flint. So if you're born in Flint, Michigan, like...
You're all right with us.
Yeah, what's her name? Sarah Bernhardt?
Yeah, Sandra Bernhardt.
Sandra Bernhardt?
Yeah.
Born in Flint herself. So Jerry here, the butler and bought and paid for. So butt and bought are the same thing. Bought and paid for archivist for Frank Zappa, the main man of Barfing Swill? Barf Goes Swill.
Barf Goes Swill.
It's a pumpkin swill.
He's an office manager of a holy office.
That's right. This is an office manager. And so he's been, of course, as being the beginning of the revolutionary situation, he's been making a Bobby documentary or a Bobumentary this week. And we're sitting here with a video camera, so that may alter our situation, but we were used to this because it happened.
Well, at least
before.
Your ego's anyways.
Yeah. Jerry goes?
No, your ego's. Alter your ego.
Yeah. Okay, Kent.
Bob.
To start off the revolution, gold's a big issue. So we go to the next tape. Since the subgenius has been waiting patiently for... data, information. That'd be side B, not the one with the label on it. Yes, side B. This is a view of the gold story from another source. There's been questions about the radioactive poison gold that the Philippines have now that got from Fort Knox. And people have been asking the relationship of Beter's talk about no gold in Fort Knox. And Beter was the only source up to that point. But there are other people who have been following that story. And Sherman Skolnick just put this message on a week or so ago, and it's appropriate because at the time that he had the message on his private service, 312-731-1100, Dr. Beter's widow was visiting Dobbstown here in Toronto and telling me some new things developing. And this is Sherman Skolnick talking about the same story, but no gold in Fort Knox from his sources and his level of approach. And note the mention of the Queen.
Are we supposed to be doing this?
Yeah, we have another message for your show, but I just thought that...
No, for the Old Canadian Week.
Yeah. It's about the Queen.
Is it? Oh, good.
It gets
okay,
into the Queen a bit here, so that's our leader, right?
Yep, that qualifies as CanCon.
Yeah. And normally Skolnick's never on this show, but this is very important because it relates to the gold story, and this is him. So, is there anything else to say about that?
No, I don't think so.
We got Canadian subgeniuses here tonight.
Yeah.
We got Doug, Dave, and Jerry, and you.
And you.
Not always, you know.
Yeah, well, you're partially here.
Yeah. Okay, so...
Just in spirit.
This is Sherman Skolnick qualifying, supplementing Dr. Beter's story on the gold. Okay.
Hi, Sherman Skolnick, Citizen Committee to Clean Up the Courts, 9800 South Oglesby. This is about gold and the overthrowing of governments. Toward the close of World War II, Italian dictator Benito Mussolini was overthrown. The Italian treasury in gold was being kept by a U.S. Army unit for the new government. The gold was being kept in a cave, and the officer in charge was mysteriously found murdered, and the gold disappeared. Some pointed to Anthony Scariano, a GI from the Chicago area, long a stronghold of the Italian and Sicilian mafia. Despite repeated official inquests, Scariano was supposedly cleared. Those in the know, however, continued to claim that Scariano was implicated and that he arranged to transfer the gold to the mafia, mostly those in America, now get this, for the purpose of having the good stuff to bribe top-level judges, prosecutors, and law enforcement officials. Tony was with the OSS, forerunner of CIA, and both used the mafia for dirty tricks. In the 1970s, Scariano headed up the highly corrupt Illinois Racing Board, regulating mafia racetracks. Later, he became a judge on the Appellate Court of Illinois, First District, Chicago, court of the big bribery, not $50 bribes like in traffic court. We once had an informal talk with the judge. He continued to deny being implicated in his commander's murder and ripping off the gold. He sloughed off reports that he was writing a book on the episode, believed by some to be a plan or a whitewash. Judge Anthony Scariano is just one of the boys from Chicago Heights, reputed mafia enclave. In the spring of 1968, the Labor government in London was facing big trouble. They ran out of gold. Quietly, a U.S. Army truck convoy under command of a general carried away most of the gold in Fort Knox, shipped to New York, and then by boat to the Bank of England. Planning to overthrow the London government in April 68 was Lord Mountbatten. Under cover of racial riots tearing apart the United States, Mountbatten traveled across the country here, enlisting aid for his planned coup and the transfer of America's gold hoard. Years later, to be sure Mountbatten stayed shut, he was murdered by British intelligence and the American CIA and falsely blamed on Irish terrorists. A member of Parliament asked to no avail for investigation of the role of the espionage agencies. In Chicago, Tom Valentine, a crusading journalist, launched a campaign about exposing Fort Knox. Valentine was editor of the National Tattler, distributed weekly in groceries and other stores nationwide. He demanded an audit of Fort Knox. The Treasury authorities finally agreed to open only one part of a vault. Get this, no gold bullion was inside, just melted down gold coins, poor quality, not eligible as gold bullion. The National Tattler hollered the gold was gone from Fort Knox, but the mass media were silent. Later, the Tattler was forced out of business under odd circumstances. Overthrown was the government in Manila, headed by Ferdinand Marcos and his wife Imelda. She's been on trial in the United States, charged with investing here billions in stolen government money. Her defense? That the source of their wealth was actually a huge gold hoard supposedly hidden in the Philippines by a Japanese general during World War II. When playing again, an IRS official is a secret partner in a mafia vending company 731-1505.
Okay, we gotta go.
That was perfect, Kent. Nice work.
Okay, Kent, you're on?
I am now.
Okay.
You gotta close the door, Kent, or it's just gonna keep feeding back.
Yeah. So, that's Skolnick supplementing the Dr. Peter Gold story. Lord Mountbatten, eh?
Mm-hmm.
He's related to the Queen. The Queen runs us, so it's Canadian content. There's a lot of gold in Canada. All right, we're going to start off the revolution on a low key, right?
Yeah.
Let's not get out of hand. All right. What's it keep down to a dull...
Low key?
Dull smell. All right. All right, I have here a way to begin this. I got a letter,
really?
A private letter by a very responsible critic. I don't know if the person would want to be identified, but this person wrote me a letter reviewing my mission, my purpose, my source. And don't forget, get any time. You can run that song. You know, it's underpinning. This letter is a result of this person studying the three albums of Bob. Letters. What are they? Dog, Bob Dogma, Fragments of Bob, and Bob's third album. And I'm going to give you some quotes of how he understands me and what he says. And he plays me off against Bob Marshall's work. Okay? This is a dialectic. This dialectic is important for us to setting up this revolution. All right. So here's what the critic says. By implication, that's good, Ken. I like that. Bob Dobbs reveals to us here what he makes very explicit elsewhere in his tapes, his albums. His commentary, a series of commentary, is dramatic, comic, and satiric.
Yes.
Utilizing the tactics of hyperbole, analogy, and metaphor so that, as Bob Dobbs suggests, he ought not to be described as a framer of theories, but as a creative communicator, an essayist, well, acoustic essayist for now, and poet. Such a statement raises problems for most critiques of Dobbs, which usually regards him in one way or another as a theorist. For Dobbs, however, writing and communicating on the radio is not... What the heck is he saying here? Just a minute. The prime is the ring. We censor that? Prime means one. He's saying discussing theoretical works for Bob Dobbs is not creative. And creative activity is the prime means of understanding the processes of the new electric age. We'll censor that. Okay. Now, he says there needs to be a reassessment of Bob Dobbs. I don't know what assessment has been done so far, but this implies that these are people discussing Bob's work, and this is kind of a dissenting view. I mean, he's talking about a general view of Bob that he feels is not accurate.
He's saying
the general view that he's come across needs a reassessment. He says, as part of such a reassessment, it will be necessary to confront the fact that Bob Dobbs considered the oralizing, the talking, the radioizing of satire to be the most appropriate means of elucidating the social, cultural, and psychological aspects of human communication and communications technology. Many other specific issues are addressed by Bob, but his criticisms of Bob Marshall's work on the history of communication and technology and his relationships and all... Oh, sorry about that, but his criticism of Bob Marshall's audio work on the history of communication and technology... And Bob Dobbs' relationship with structuralist and postmodernist writers and cassette makers interested in communication in the arts should be considered. Okay, he goes into a bit of Bob Dobbs. He says that Bob Dobbs suggests that, quote, only natural and living forms are classified as hylomorphic in traditional Western knowledge, so that in considering the life of forms expressed by Aristotle in the terms energia, which is act, and entelechia, which is perfection, the human arts are by definition excluded. In this typical hyperbolic style of Bob Dobbs, however, he suggests that in the history of Western thought, the natural and living forms are privileged in opposition to the products of the human arts. Without pursuing the complicated discussion that would be required, says the critic, to cope with the technical and historical problems posed by these statements, they do demonstrate the extremely high value which Dobbs places on the relationship between art and techne in the shaping of human society. Mm-hmm. Now, he says, despite the simplification, it is possible to describe Canadian communication theory as an arc running from Bob Marshall to Bob Dobbs. He then quotes Oscar Wilde and says, it would be more impressive, as Oscar Wilde said, staring at Niagara Falls if it ran the other way. Well, Bob's tapes, the three albums that are out, do not achieve the miracle that some pinks are hoping for. While that's not what they get out of them, Bob's tapes clearly make a claim for a reevaluation of himself that may transform his work into a type of advance and extension of Bob Marshall's work, which the Pinks wish it had been. If Bob Dobbs claims to his listeners are correct, his approach would ultimately reveal more facets of the actual situation of human communication in the electrotechnical era than Bob Marshall did. Furthermore, and what does anything do with the fact that Bob Marshall's stopping his show this week? I'm sorry. Burton didn't think of that. Furthermore, Dobbs would also regard that era far more critically than Bob Marshall had. Later in the careers of Bob Marshall and Bob Dobbs, each of them turned to reflecting on himself and his activities as myth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this critic then seems to be quite acquainted with structuralist writers, post-structuralists, so he goes, in the writings of Jacques Derrida, is that how you say it, Doug? Derrida?
Yeah.
Derrida, are not mentioned, that's great, let it run, man. Although the writings of Jacques Derrida are not mentioned in his correspondence or in Bob's tapes, his cassettes provide grounds for a comparison with Derrida. Even though Derrida appears not to have taken serious note of Bob Dobbs' work, since he mentions Bob only once in his various books and essays, there are a surprising number of similar themes. These are the themes which Dobbs reiterates again and again in his tapes and shows. The fundamental opposition between speech and writing, but also such associated themes as logocentrism, writing, phonetic transcription, dissemination, pleurovorticity, synesthesia, and a mutual fascination with the writings of Mallarmé and Joyce, to mention only a few. These comparisons with postmodernists like Derrida will form an important aspect of any reevaluation of Dobbs or any critique of the introduction of structuralist and post-structuralist theory into current discussions of communication theory.
Bob, this is for eye, not ear, for God's sake. We just lost about a million listeners.
Yeah, but
and
we
that
gained.
Was good.
Yeah, and we gained. That was good that we lost those. So the ones who are tuning in now for you, Dave, you can criticize all you want, but you take over the reins of control in this revolution. All right, we go back to this treatise here. Nevertheless, it is not on the issue of Bob playing with or playing up to the great names of his generation, you know, Pierre Trudeau, Hubert Humphrey, Jimmy Carter, William Jovanovich, Ashley Montague, Jacques Maritain, Ezra Pound, Wyndham Lewis, John Wayne, the English novelist John Cage, and many others. It's not enough that the cassettes, the album and his radio work will lead to a valuable reevaluation of Dobbs' contribution. No. While the, what is it, while the...
Telephone, Bob.
Ah, okay. Take
Should we take a call?
Yeah, good. Maybe this is someone who wants to join the revolution, temporary as it is.
Let's get this up here. CKLN.
Two guys were sitting in a restaurant. One of them was Charles Manson. It was a summer night. It was getting warmer, warmer, sweatier, sweatier. Manson looked at the other guy and he said, is it actually getting hot in here, or am I crazy?
Okay, well, that's an appraisal, a reassessment of Bob as a negative influence like Manson was in his revolution. Are we attempting that, boys here, Doug and Dave, young men, young people willing to sacrifice their subgenius element for a place in the sun, you know?
No, that might be a little warm, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, good point, Ken.
Getting really not into this sun gig. I'm a night owl.
Okay, so with the night, the revolution's got to take place at night, and we're doing it now, so, okay, well, tell us what you want to do then. What do you suggest we do, Dave? How do we begin to involve others in a sense of something momentous that would be beneficial to Sharon?
Do a new form of replay.
A little louder, Dave?
New forms of replay.
Why?
So that they can match and make.
You mean revolution as a cliche, so you do it in a new form?
Sure, I'll take that.
Okay. Now, Doug, your suggestion? Doug, on the competing side, what do you suggest for Revolution? More time, airtime for Connie, or what?
Definitely
that's
more time.
More
airtime
for
Connie.
Yeah,
much airtime for Connie as possible.
That's a proposal.
You mean that Connie could figure off a revolution.
No, I thought...
Readings from Connie's purple book.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Purple Manifesto. Go ahead.
I thought we were still taking the right tack, the homeopathic approach.
Yeah.
Ingesting or getting the people to ingest a little
And, I mean, I sense the Bob revolution happening.
Yeah, in the sense...
If only on a personal level.
Yeah, in the sense that Bob stimulates a little bit of revolution, mm-hmm. but then he doesn't want to be saddled with the bureaucratic hassle of managing it, so he allows mm-hmm. you to fill in the gaps.
He and also doesn't want to see the revolution come to an end.
Yeah, that's right. Right. So he sort of merges into many revolutions, mm-hmm. and so therefore he can hijack any previous revolutionary cliches and...
So he can play.
And replay them with mm-hmm. new intensity and in a new context, mm-hmm. right? And
so we're bobbing up and down, Bob.
If we become too hip too fast, it'll be like the Bolsheviks. The middle class will take over the revolution before we know it.
Yeah, well, we are, again, talking about a revolution that's totally in a discarnate state here, mm-hmm. right? So that it happens every second Wednesday, and it's something that never could be grasped in the sense of a bureaucratic translation to other media, could it? How could this revolution be translated into another form, other than the one that happens here?
Well, it couldn't, but I think people would try and franchise... The Bob Revolution.
Ah, yeah, yeah. In other words, we got to stay non-commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Or non-involvement in another medium, you know? Non-involvement in another medium?
It just changes the nature of the inner trip.
I think the whole thing that the dogma can change is important. So, because if Bob... That way Bob will always be in charge of the revolution, because as soon as someone tries to take over Bob... Bob will just change the rules.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, but see, these rules imply some kind of translation into a physical reality. Okay. This is really aphysical, mm-hmm. this situation here, this revolution. So it's a transformation of consciousness itself. Mm-hmm. So
that's very difficult for us to grasp, Bob.
And this is why I'm now, you guys perfectly scripted right into this next point from this critic's review. This is what the person deals with. In dealing with the problem of communication in a non-physical level, it says further... Mm-hmm. The conversational frankness of Bob's show, mm-hmm. Bob Dobbs' show, which complements his tapes, underlines just how far Bob Dobbs' objective analyses of the age of communication were developed to protect a set of biases which were conservational as well as conservative. There's a conservative agenda here. This aspect of Bob's work hardly presents the ultra-modern, futuristic left-wing idol who dominated the media for a couple of years as the prophet of the communication society. That was down in Dallas. But Bob also underlines a schizophrenia, which is central to understanding why Bob achieved what he did and made some of the most central contributions to dialogue concerning communication in our time. All right? So, taking from the symbolist, the modernist, Nietzsche, the avant-garde, the diabolist... I evolved this. What's that? You
good, baby? Good.
Yep. These provide counterweights. The symbolist, the modernist, Nietzsche, the avant-garde, the diabolist, these provide counterweight to Bob's love conversation, print, his literary humanism, and his Thomism, or his Catholicism. Intellectually, Bob inhabits the world of Walter Benjamin and Roland Barthes. Emotionally, he seeks refuge in the comfort of the traditional radio show, in personal dialogue, a romantic dialogue with callers, in a pietistic subgeniushood, and a romantic reconstruction of medieval universalism, this writer suggests. The resulting tension and paradoxes between faith, emotionally based, in his own work, and knowledge, intellectually based, reflects a prime modern dilemma, whatever the emotional or intellectual poles may be. Bob is himself representative of the crucifixion of intellectual man. Well, that's what he's suggesting. I don't think so. I'm a sensory man as well, so... which permeates the philosophy and literature of the 20th century. Yet from this tension, often nearing the edge of schizoid dimensions, there arise penetrating elucidations of what Bob considers to be modernity's prime concern, communication itself. To understand what Bob contributes to such a discussion, it is necessary to confront a problem which it appears communication efforts has found nearly impossible to confront, the role of the arts and the artists in further understanding of communication. For the major influence on Bob's work are poetic. For Bob, literature, especially poetry, is essential for understanding the modern world. The other arts... just the last sentence here. The other arts, film, the visual arts, sculpture, and dance are also very important, but they clearly occupy a secondary role compared to that of the poet. This is what this critic says.
I know, but Bob, I have the mental level of a 12-year-old, so you can appeal to
No, yeah, sometimes. Have you been aware, Dave? You can't hear that, yeah. Bob relates the creative processes of poetry and other arts to the creative act as he understands it, as described in Thomistic philosophy. So I got to relate to a 12-year-old, but I think a 12-year-old can handle a world where there's no dogma lasting for very long, since a 12-year-old have a short attention span, Dave. So I'm sorry I felt like
you
were...
charisma,
yeah, you're... I'm impinging on your attention span, all right, by asking this...
Very academic, man. Bob. This is...
Yeah. Oh, this is a revolution. Bob! The troops are confused by this, Bob. Yeah. Okay. Doug, what did you want to say during the Skolnick tape?
Oh, it's just when they mentioned the sergeant who was in charge of the gold who happened to mysteriously die. It's always, I always find it funny and amazing that no one else...
Doug, I can't hear you, Doug. Hey, kid, turn it down a bit, man.
Yes, Doug.
Well, it seems to be coming through in the headphones. I can't hear what Doug's
music.
Saying. Yeah, music. Thanks. Great.
It always amazes me, and I find immense humor in when, for instance, when this sergeant who is looking after the gold dies, surprising. All these things that just sort of happen, and everyone just sort of, it's like...
At the time,
no one, everyone just goes, and even now, still, right? Everyone just goes... Oh, the sergeant died mysteriously. Or there's out of the 2,500 photographs taken at the Robert Kennedy assassination, 2,400 are missing, and it never gets brought up again. And it's like it never really happened. And those, I mean, obviously those photographs weren't important because they hardly took any. They only took 2,500. So I always find it very funny that no one actually brings up.
Doug, you know what that also is proof? That only Bob's revolution will succeed because it doesn't require ballistic evidence.
Yeah. It doesn't require any.
And being discarnate, there's no physical evidence.
Yeah, you can't stop it or who's been affected. That's right, eh? So,
and
Bob,
what?
You're in a tremendous situation.
Yeah, I'm counter Arthur.
So why the hell are you reading?
Just to get the revolution going. Hey, I'm setting down the enemy
here. The only
here.
Thing that would get Bob's revolution would be electroshock where... person's memory is wiped out, and their sense of being discarnate.
Ooh,
yeah.
That goes right into what I want to talk about. Schwarzenegger is pumping a total recall, right? Total recall. Total recall. Now, we're talking memory. No memory left. Nobody's reading the newspaper in terms of relating it to what went the day before. So that's why Bob's show, The Revolution, changes every 2 weeks.
Nobody reads the newspaper in relation to the page that came before,
yes,
Bob.
Yeah, or the page it's on.
The Sun, where it's says, you know,
so collective amnesia is the fact today, and Bob's communicating to that by not being responsible for what he said 2 weeks ago, right?
It's
not important.
What this
right?
reviewer is saying, I think this reviewer is talking about comprehensive awareness here, and how Bob can deal with comprehensive awareness because he's building on dealing with theory, but in a poetic fashion.
Yes,
and
now
by
he's quoting
doing this, and it's like people who. Are culturally mobile. They can go to a dance one night, they can go listen to Bob one night, and because they live their life in a poetic fashion, they're able to meld all their experiences from eating dinner to listening to Bob into one.
The collective
life.
Consciousness.
And they're not fragmented.
The global solar Esperanto is already happening. The global global collective consciousness, and that's what's so appropriate about Scott's message, that Bob will talk until collective consciousness, what, is realized by everybody. We have arrived. The revolutions, all of them, have succeeded. And now the problem is it gone too far? Is it too much? When will it stop? Do we need more? Of course we do. So we can enjoy
more.
Every day, every moment, as an extension of the most highest decibels of ecstatic communication that anybody on this planet could experience in the solar system. And then that leads to 595-1478. Let's have some
now
new converts.
You're so psychic, that's what I was thinking. Did
yeah,
you
we need
that
to
call,
yeah, oh, yeah, Dave, I'm making with you. Knowledge is making. It is made every day and experiences. Perception. We got a caller, Kent.
Dean?
No,
that's okay. Because you know what?
595-147. Let's hear from Dublin. I think we haven't heard from Dublin in three or four shows. Let's hear from Dublin. Dublin, he's going to really screw up this revolution with his ability to talk.
Bob,
if Bob stops talking, Dub could take over, right?
No,
Dublin could continue
Bob.
It.
Maybe he can, but Bob, we've got a special guest here on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
I want him to come in. I want to interview him.
Okay, come on, Jerry. You're coming in, buddy.
I will. But
you want a place to stay tonight? Get in here.
Or at least Beaver should call.
Yeah, where's Beaver? Now, Jerry, Zapp is a representative from the Holy Office. Shut the door, Jerry. Great. Has always wanted to hear from Beaver, and we haven't heard from Beaver in 8 months or something. There's a chair over there.
Right.
Come on in, Jerry. Just shut that tightly. Hey, come on in here, right in here.
Yeah.
This is Jerry.
Oh, I like
lift it up, man. Use that chair over there. Don't break the microphone.
Yeah.
Okay, so right there, Jerry.
It's been a rain bomb.
All right. Well,
I think the listeners, we can they can even ask Jerry questions about what it's like to work for one of our holy offices, Frank Zappa.
Well, my first question is, being a student and that sort of thing, I want to know, how do you get a job working?
Oh, wait, we got to call it.
Save your question,
Dave.
You're Bert, Dave.
It's Dublin. Let's see if it's Dublin.
Okay. Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dublin. Yeah. Right on schedule. 12:25 or, well, 12:36, Dublin was scheduled to call. Thanks, Dub. What's on?
I just had a terrible experience, bud.
What? The Revolutionary?
No. You know I like to play the Pick 3 lottery?
Oh, no.
No, listen to this. This is broadcast news and it's Canadian content.
Yeah?
There's a thing called SK Gold Mines.
Oh, great. We're talking gold tonight.
Right. It's a big discovery and...
Oh, in BC?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Big money and it's a scandal. Not last night, but the night before, Diane Francis was talking on CFRB, right?
Yep.
And she said drill hole 109 was the big one. It was a winner. So I had written that exact number out in that order and given it to a buddy of mine last week on a list of 12.
Yeah.
So I wrote it down, and I thought, BS on this. This is synchronicity. I ought to bet it, but I'm not going to. It just won $600 24 hours later.
Oh, now that's 109. That's 19. That's Bob's number.
No, your number's in the mail. Remember I told you last week that 386, the Intel microprocessor number, would win? Well, it did win. It won Saturday night, but it came in as 368. So you only would have got $50.
Right. Well, but the point is, you should have gone for the 109, even though you didn't feel it was appropriate. I always count to a 109 before I wake up when I take a
power. Well, it's pretty dull stuff, but it's true anyways. The day after I told you that, Lee Harvey Oswald's CIA number came in, 669.
Where? You mean when on our show or on Dave Emery's show, Bob Martin's
no,
show?
No, the Thursday after your last show.
Well, who put it on the air?
Who put what on the air?
Oswald's number.
Oh, Marshall.
Oh, you mean you heard it and it came in on the lottery?
It came in the day after I gave you a prediction.
Yeah, on the lottery.
Yeah, so I thought that was synchronicity.
Well, are you ready to go public with your system? You're contemplating that?
I haven't made any money yet.
but you yourself know you're picking the right things. It's just you just don't make the right personal decision in relation to the truth.
What it is, it's harder than it looks. Like, it's real easy to have a vision in front of your mind's eye that keeps shifting. It's got about 17 numbers in it, and one of them's going to come in about 4 days. What nobody does is multiply 4 by 17.
Yeah.
You get about $68, which is about the value of one price. So
$68, yeah.
It's one first. The first part of it is to get the right numbers in front of your mind's eye. The second part's the hard part, to learn when to reach out and pick the right one.
To grab. When man's reach, Dublin's reach must exceed his grasp, right?
Well, there's two sides to it. A system should present you with short lists that have got possible winners on them pretty regularly. But I don't think any system will pick, can't force tomorrow's issue, right?
Yeah. Dave, I think, has a response to you. Yeah, Dave, you want to say something to Dub?
Yeah, I just thought Dub Mix, he just very well elucidated the interplay between conscious and unconscious. When his conscious mind tried to become aware of the subconscious mind, read the messages, know how to interpret them, and play and get along with it. So a harmonious interplay, too.
Yeah, that's in a plebeian way.
Oh, yeah.
In a which way? A plebeian?
Plebeian. People being.
Plebeian.
Let the people be. Plebeian. People being. Plebeian.
Is that like having a really weird dream when you wake up?
Yeah, when you wake up, you have a dream.
And the last image is right there in your mind, and you say, what was that?
Yeah, nice edit.
But a minute ago, you were there. And then you forget all about it. Mm.
Yeah, isn't that great that it goes away? Total Recall. No basis for a revolution. Schwarzenegger had it all wrong in that movie, didn't he? Mm. Total Recall. That's why in the end he had to say, is this a dream? You know, he had to cop out. He couldn't take the implications.
I didn't see the movie. How did it go?
Never mind. Just intuit what we're talking about.
All right.
Yeah, it's the same problem that you're having. He had, though. He tried to take over Mars and save Mars, Martian colonies, slave people. Brought in the Exus alien cultures, too.
Total Recall. Why do they call it Total Recall?
Because he was an advanced victim of MKUltra mind control. They erased his memory of his action in a previous...
So the plot is he gets back pieces of his memory.
The movie is a replaying of the process of cognition, a retracing of the process of cognition, which is the basic Thomistic insight that James Joyce got to make Finnegan's Wake. And then Marshall McLuhan took that and extended the process of cognition and the phases it goes through to the media evolution itself, the various artifacts, the extensions of our body parts, internal, external, as phases of cognitive effect as people experience them as environments. You retrace that on a macro level, whereas
I wonder if that's true. I was just reading. I was just reading Fred Hoyle, right?
And yeah, he was reading Fred, trying to bounce off of Steve Hawking, right?
No. He's much better.
Who's much better? Who's much better? Hoyle is. Gordon Hoyle, okay.
No, Fred Hoyle. He's the original thinker.
Yeah.
He was a participant when they made those big bang steady state theories 30 years ago. He was one of the major players. But what he says is that we are a virus from outer space. What he says basically, now you know the Hubble Space Telescope, right?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be able to see 14 billion light years.
Yeah.
But they estimate that the age of the universe to be between 12 and 20 billion light years. Now, if it takes light 14 billion years to travel that far, then quite obviously, if you can see 20 billion light years, you are seeing back to the moment of the Big Bang. So
yeah.
The nature of physics changes in the moment of the Big Bang. The laws of physics as we understand them simply do not hold true. A Big Bang can't happen unless the laws of physics change, because it's when the universe goes through a vanishing point, and the whole structure, including the laws,